Welcome to Zach's Heart to Biz podcast. Hi, I'm Ankita. At Zach, we love stories that are equal parts strategy and soul. Today, we are joined by a power-packed duo, Drishti and Naman, co-founders of DTR, an end-to-end digital marketing agency. From scaling a business and a relationship together to balancing creativity and client chaos, they have built something real in the Reels world.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Zareen, co-founder of Zach Business Consultants. And we don't only like stories, we love love stories. You've been in an integral part of our journey as well. So we're not only guests on this podcast, we're also partners in what we do.
Thank you for having us. We've, like you've said, we've had a relationship since over a year. And you guys have completed 5 years. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We're very, very, very excited. And we're looking forward to this conversation. We've never done this before. So it's a first for us as well. So we started dating around 10 years ago. We have very, very different backgrounds, right? He's a lawyer.
Who is that?
Nice. I can go to court if I want
to.
And I've done engineering and then MBA, and then I did a job, and it just like dropped off, just started pretty randomly actually. Like, we used to create filters when there was lockdown, and from there the clients that we worked with, and they really liked how the campaign strategy and the graphics looked. And it's kind of from there where we got into social media. So this wasn't something that was really planned. It's just something that happened. And yeah, here we are today.
And how many years ago did DTR happen?
It's 4.5 years now, I think. Yeah. So it's been like a roller coaster of a journey. Like, honestly, I didn't imagine it to be where it is today. What started as something which was supposed to be all fun and games eventually culminated and snowballed into something that's really now bigger than I'd imagined. And now my expectations from it are even higher than I'd, you know, set out to achieve at a certain point. We've gone from strength to strength, and we've built just organically. And I think the biggest credit, like, when people look at us, they look at our clients and feel like, okay, they have great clients. But I don't look at it that way. I just think I have a great team.
No, you have great clients.
No, absolutely.
You might have a great team.
but yeah, I think the only thing that supersedes that is the team that has been built along the journey, because I think that's the greatest asset that I have, and that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
So you guys are a full-blown digital marketing agency. Tell us about your team, 35 people. How do you break up your tasks, especially between a couple? That's such a difficult thing to do.
We both have very, very, very different skill sets, even in terms of personalities. Naman largely takes care of everything finance, a part of HR, I want to say, and business development. And yeah, most of the operations is something that I look into. We're also getting into production now. So the bigger picture stuff, and I feel like the vision for the company mainly comes from Naman. I would say I'm more like the operations ninja.
I like that operation. And if there is something to do with finance that you want to, if there's a problem, do you take it up with him? How do you communicate? So, how do you manage conflict?
So essentially, even for conflict between us, what we've realized over time is that we have our own domains, which we don't step over. Like, if it's a finance conflict between us, his word is final. I won't really argue. Also, in general, before even sending out a simple quote to a client, I will check with him, because at the end of the day, it's his call. Even if I'm pretty sure, I'll still double check once. And I think he does the same for operations, just so that we're always on the same page. And there's no dual decision making happening, because that's where most of the problems lie.
So if it's a finance problem, he's going to take a call. But if it's an operations problem, you're going to take a call?
That's actually exactly how it is. And the funny part is that, you know, in general, clients and even our team, what they feel is that because we're also together, they feel like when they tell me something, it's already reached him. So it's more like there's continuous conversation. So if they tell him something, they assume the answer may come from me. But I'm just like, no, this conversation has to be closed with him, and this conversation has to be closed with me. And then we just don't entertain the conversation, just so that, again, there's no overlap. So
but when things are hunky-dory, it's fine. But if one of you sees the other person slacking, then what happens?
I think slacking is important, honestly. Okay, I have a very contrarian opinion on slacking in general. I just feel that you cannot perform optimally like
all the time.
It's not possible. And especially in a field like ours that's creative, it's impossible. Also, it's super subjective, right? Like what you may like, I may not. So there's no way to like judge what creativity is. But I think slacking is important because if you don't have that dedicated downtime, you're not going to perform at your best or the other. You just have to pick and choose when you can slack and when you can't slack.
But don't you get bored of the conversations? Ghar pe bhi wahi baat, office mein bhi wahi baat, wahi log, wahi dost, wahi universe. Har time isi ka shakal dekho. Can't have a side office romance.
We actually surprisingly also have the same friend circle.
Yeah, exactly. We have
like our entire world is the same.
Yeah.
But I feel in a way, like at work, we actually don't overlap a lot. So a lot of the times when he's at work or he's doing a certain task, I will not be doing the same task because that's kind of duplication of effort as well, right? Because we both come in strong with our opinions. So that being said, also in terms of like conversations at home, we try to have no work conversations beyond a point, obviously, because we also work together. And sometimes I feel like it's normal to talk about work at non-working hours, especially when you're doing a business together. Yeah. It's natural, right? Yeah. And you guys would also know that where there are no end timings or you can't clock out from office fully. Yeah. Like even our holidays, there have been times when we've had deadlines and we've worked together. But because we both have that sense of responsibility towards the same goal, we're more inclined to do that in a healthier way.
You're building something together. Yeah. Right? That's like the bigger mission that binds you together.
I mean, in a lot of ways, we feel like it's our first baby. So
It is absolutely our first baby.
We're very, very responsible towards it.
What are your shared values, right? Because I think that's something which would tie you in together.
I mean, honestly, I feel we're very, very like vastly different people in terms of our approach for, you know, every problem that has come our way. But there are a few core shared values, I would believe, that kind of tie everything together. Just to name a few examples, one is absolute loyalty, which is whether it's to each other, whether it's to our work, whether it's to a client, whether it's to our team. Loyalty beyond words, beyond money, beyond measure is something that is very integral to us. And apart from that, just the chase of excellence. Like honestly, I haven't looked at business from a perspective of money from day one. And I don't intend to look at it from that perspective for a while yet to go, because money will chase success. Success will not chase money. So building something that's actually valuable and that's desirable, that's been something that's common between the two of us. And I just think that's two things that really make sense to me in terms of what's common for us, I think.
Also, in general, something that we both were very clear about was culture isn't just about putting a couple of bean bags and saying we're cool. It's about, it's something that seeps into every conversation. It's something that's a part of every, hey, how are you today? Checking in constantly, etc. So yeah, that way I think we're both on the same page about what we're trying to build for the company.
What does the culture look like?
So what we've tried since day one is one, a completely open door policy. Like once you enter our office, we have no doors. So it's about that transparency across hierarchies where anyone can speak up what they're feeling. It's almost like a feedback on loop situation where if anyone has anything to say, whether it's about processes, whether it's about clients, whether it's about the team, whether it's about anything, and even if it's about the coffee.
Everybody these days has been talking about the attrition, the problems around Gen Z. So how do you tackle that with the, like, you know, you want to build this culture and you're already having it in your office, but does it bite you in the back?
There have been cases where it has bit us in the back a little bit. But there's no better way to build what we're building than the way we're doing it. Like, honestly, you have to take a chance on someone at some point. And
so true. Yeah.
You have to take it when you take it. Like, we've also had cases where people have come, gone, and messaged us in 2 months again, can I come back? Because, you know, like, they haven't seen the real world picture of what it's like out there. And Right. The privilege that has been offered to them at a certain extent. Mm. So there have been cases, but I think it's part of the journey.
And absolutely. Naman, just looking at the client list that you have, tell us about how did you build this pipeline? How did you build, how did you earn the trust of people? You're a lawyer coming into this. How did you build trust?
No, so I attribute it to a little bit of luck also.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything in life comes without luck, because there are, I would believe, I would be too narcissistic to say I'm the most hardworking person in the room. There are people working harder than us, and it's just that they've not come by the right opportunity, the right time. Mm. So in terms of building, it's been all organic, honestly. We had our first set of clients, and coincidentally, Kriti Sanon's manager used to work out with them.
Oh, okay.
And she saw the page doing really well, because organically in like a month and a half, we got them to 10K followers. Mm. Just from scratch, from like ground up. And she really found it interesting. She set a meeting with us, and we got on a call with her, and she said she likes mine and Drishti's vibe.
Mm.
But at that point, we had only one person in that team. So she said, you got to come back to me in a month's time with a team and show me a way how you can execute and pull this off, because you're not dealing with 10,000 followers anymore. You're dealing with 40 million followers. So it's an exponentially large jump. So it was... I also have a lot of gratitude for everyone who gave us those chances, but it's just been organic and word of mouth. I don't think we've really had to put ourselves out there and pitch and market too hard. It's just been an initial bit of luck and then just persevering with the cause.
Yeah, and but then I keep seeing you adding more clients. How do you manage capacity? Because it's quite an intense job that you guys do, right? There's shooting, there's scripting, there's editing, putting it all together. The same team can take on how many more clients?
No, so there was a point of time where we used to pick up anything and everything that came our way, because at that point, scaling was more important than, you know, trying and seeing what value it's adding to us in general.
Right.
Today, we've become a little pickier with the kind of work that we also want to pick up, because now I know the quantum of the team. I know how hard it is to hire. Like on average, if we do like 20, 25 interviews, we end up hiring maybe 3 or 4 people on average. So the process has become pickier, because what happens is that when the initial team size was around maybe 10, 15, 18 people, everyone was directly under us and spending so much time with us that
you were hands-on training them and molding them and building.
Absolutely. The larger the team gets now at a 35, there are times where I'll meet certain people from the team who have joined recently. Not that bad, hopefully. But maybe say once a week, maybe once in 2 weeks, probably. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is that our roles are also evolving. So while we both started operations and execution and getting all things done, my role has in general evolved to doing more business development.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since we are setting up an entire new wing for production, which is a different ball game and a monster in itself.
So how do you know how to do production?
We learn.
I think for production, because we've been on so many sets,
right?
Because of the nature of work that we do, even with celebrities, in a way we picked it up along the way.
On the job, in a way.
Yeah. And also I feel like it's kind of like our instinct, like we got it. And again, in production, it's vast. So there's like when you produce something, there's someone who directs it, etc. Mm. So again, our skill sets are so different that we cover a lot. Like we cover a lot of the area because of the difference in skill sets. So that helps a lot.
I still remember our first production set, and everyone was doing everything. Usually when you go to a set, there is one person doing production or one person who has a team under him. There's a direction team, there is a line producer, there's an art director, there's someone on sound, there's someone on DOP who's recording the video. So there are a lot of components that go into production. When we got our first production gig, we're like, oh, kar lenge. We just had to show up at set and we know who will shoot the video, we know what the video has to look like, and that's it. And when we reached set, it was like a task and a half. Like
there's so many.
It took so much out of us. Like, I personally remember, like, the crew stopped working because they didn't get food. So I've driven out 40 minutes away to go and get spoons and knives for everyone. And like we were figuring out the smallest of smallest things. But I think each project makes us like just a little stronger, a little more experienced. So like, yeah, we figured it out, I think, in a nutshell. It's not something that...
So tell us one thing. Like, you work with so many clients and especially founder-led and creator-led businesses. What is the one thing that you've learned from one founder or something that really sticks with you?
Tell us all the dirty details.
So we worked with Paral Gulati, who's the founder of Mishair.
She's amazing. She's so good.
She actually is. So I remember being in a room with her and we had to do a campaign. And I was sitting across her and I've not seen that much clarity of vision in anybody. So it's like we had to do this campaign about this new product that she was launching. And she had it all... she had it all visualized. It was just like, I want A, B, C, D, and I want it exactly like this. And I was just like, that, you know, that quick decision making, the clarity in vision, etc., is one of the reasons why Nishair is doing so well today. I mean, that woman is amazing.
She herself has come a long way. She was a model, actor, and now this is just so...
She is an actor.
Yeah, and she is an actor, absolutely. And she's just like become this kick-ass businesswoman, right?
Yeah, I think she has it all. I think she's blessed. Also, I feel like the minute you put Parul Gulati in front of the camera, every angle looks beautiful. She's and amazing. I was just like, oh my God, wow. Yeah. Like, yeah, and also, I mean, she's literally beauty and brains together. Mm. So from her, essentially what I learned was that you can be really fast at making decisions and making good ones. And don't doubt yourself. Just do it. I mean... She's literally that in a person.
And yeah, she's cracked the algorithm. Like, she's done collabs with Ganji Chudel, which is like a meme page. She shows up on every meme. Like, she's commenting on stuff, whether it's a Swiggy driver, whether it's a Zomat. She just shows up. And it just shows once again that...
So she does it herself? Does she have a team? How
she does it herself.
Wow.
She does it herself. She's... on record told us that I scroll Instagram to the point where it shows that you have nothing left to see. So she knows Instagram at the back of her hand. And it goes on to show that if you just show up, sometimes discipline also cracks it. And she's just there everywhere.
And you're in a high competition market. There's so many digital marketing agencies. Of course, there's a demand. But there's so many people out there. How do you differentiate?
I think... I don't know if I should say something controversial, but maybe I will say it. I will. So, I think 90% of digital marketing agencies today are templatized. From the get-go, from the first meeting, you can tell that these people are here to make a quick buck. And these people are here to fit in the same chipkao wala strategy. Ke, haan, we'll give you 15 posts a month. We'll give you 10 stories a month. And we'll make a calendar and this, but marketing is way more dynamic than your 15 posts and 10 stories. Yes. Marketing is about what is hot right now, what is trending right now, what's going to happen next, what are the platforms I should be on, is something happening in the world that I need to get involved with. So I don't think marketing can be templatized. Like, even when we onboard a client, the first thing I tell them that this is a skeleton structure. It's meant to be just a skeleton structure because marketing cannot be templatized. There should be months where you don't post anything or post even twice. It's fine. You don't have to run a rat race if you really want to do something worthwhile.
Most of our clients have been with us since a while now because we're also like, we believe in this thing where we kind of like to go back to the drawing board in a way, internally re-pitch to the client. So say if we're working with you, every like 3 months, we take a step back, internally sit down and say, okay, if we were re-pitching to this client, what would we do? Okay. What would we do differently? That's what avoids us from getting into this rut, or like it avoids the team from going into this laid back zone where we're just doing what we're doing. It allows us to rethink the strategy.
I love it. I love that you kind of stop, analyze, you look back and say, okay, what's working, what's not working. CAC is like the scariest word for people on this side. And a lot of it is controlled by you guys, right? And what advice would you give brands and entrepreneurs out there to get a good, solid digital marketing strategy, which can help them over the long term, right? Like new brands, new founders, especially because that's the audience that we're catering to and the community that we're building. What are the tips that you would give a new founder in maximizing their digital marketing game?
The most essential thing for any business. Again, I'm not going to categorize by a startup or by an MNC. I think it's number one, identifying what it is that you're here for. If it's a new brand and they are chasing sales from day one, that's a problem. I think you need to gauge where you stand and you need to have a slightly larger picture in mind. Like when you're just launching, firstly, this is just some advice for any startup out there. If you have, say, 100 rupees, do not spend more than 5 rupees a month. You need to plan long term rather than trying to make an impact, because that impact will not be able, you won't be able to sustain the impact if you don't have any budget left behind you. So focus on what it is that you really want to build with your brand. So when you're a startup, you have to sustain for at least six to eight months, I think is like the bare minimum, where you just have to be just noticed. I don't think you should be chasing sales or I need to get a big influencer followers. On board, followers, nothing, none of that matters. Just be cool. As long as you're cool, people will notice you. People will take a liking to you and people will, you know, it's not just online, it's offline. People will start talking, okay, there's this brand that's pretty cool. Even if it doesn't convert to a follower, you know. So then what you do month eight onwards will start reaping you benefits of what you've done for the first 8 months. So as a startup, just sustain your money, plan your money better. Don't go for like one big campaign because that's not going to do anything. As compared to that, MNCs are also misguided. They think now being cool is the right way. They don't need to be cool. Every MNC doesn't need to be a Credit, doesn't need to be a Zomato. You need to stick to your tonality. And
yeah, there's so many traditional brands out there who try to look cooler and then they really fall flat on the face.
It becomes cringe.
Fitty nahi hai. Absolutely, yeah. It becomes cringe.
Yeah, so I think it's really essential to figure out what your brand needs to do rather than just focusing on numbers and finances. Because I understand the performance marketing of science eventually where you want to convert and do sales. Like when you're getting into like needy performance marketing, yes, I get that. But with digital, no, just try and build your identity rather than focus on the rest.
What I'm hearing is one is consistency, finding the right platform. So what would you recommend to, like if you have to recommend to a B2B brand and a B2C brand, what are the platforms that they should consider?
Again, this is something that can't be templatized. It obviously depends on the category, the brand, whether it's a new brand, old brand, etc., what they're trying to build out. But traditionally, they say B2B brands should definitely be on LinkedIn because that's where a lot of value can be added. And B2C brands should definitely be there on Instagram. Or, I mean, how we would say it is identify where your customer lies and then work backwards from there. And also see what the end goal on each platform is.
We've heard this so many times. Ki identify where your customer lies. Main Instagram pe bhi hu, main LinkedIn pe bhi hu. I'm both places. So how do I behave differently when I'm on Instagram and when I'm on LinkedIn? And
I feel like the core personality remains the same, but the way you show up on LinkedIn and Instagram would be different. I'll explain this with an analogy. So if you're the same person and if you go to a workplace versus if you go out, you know how there's some difference in the way you behave? That's essentially what the difference is on these platforms. Mm-hmm. Some of them are a lot more serious. Some of them are a lot more engaging.
Right.
And it depends on the personality you're trying to build.
But the conversation that you have on both are different?
I think the intention is different. Like Instagram as a platform, I think caters more to that in general where it's something that you do in your 5 minutes off, as compared to LinkedIn is a platform that has given people lives. People who don't have a job, people who need to find hires, people who, you know, just, and your big administrators and decision makers are way more active on LinkedIn than you'd imagine.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. With anything and everything, even getting perspective. I think for me also, my personal social media consumption has gone from being all Instagram to now being a mix of like LinkedIn and YouTube,
right,
actually.
Right.
Because I see what people are up to. Because as an entrepreneur, the only thing that you need to do is constantly evolve. You need to keep learning and you need to keep growing.
Yeah. For us, LinkedIn has been fabulous. It's our primary sales channel is LinkedIn. Plus referrals, of course, word of mouth, you can't not take that.
Absolutely.
But LinkedIn has been really, really solid for us. We're meeting so many amazing, interesting brands, founders, which otherwise we would have never even thought about. And therefore, we are getting introduced and introducing our services to categories that were really not things that we were looking at. It's really helping us push our ticket size in the way. And that person, when they see us that same person, when they see us on Instagram, it kind of just adds ki acha, okay, these are those guys. Right? So absolutely. It kind of is stacking, but we've had a great experience and very different experience both on Instagram as well as and LinkedIn.
So tell me this, like, so client has multiple agencies, they have in-house teams. Now you are giving certain ideas and you're implementing certain things in your project that you have, but how do you deal with other agencies, because they might be doing some really different things? So how does the client also bring it together and how do you help them bring it together?
So you mean like for each client, they work with, say, a PR agency, they work with us, they may work with another agency to plan events, etc. What we like to do is we kind of work in conjunction with all of these partners, because again, we all have a shared goal. At the end of the day, the goal is that the client needs to succeed. What we try doing from our end is we actually, for most of our clients, we think of them like as we are an extension of their team. So while they work with multiple agencies across the spectrum, we like to be a part of conversations that may not impact us directly. Because at the end of the day, we should all be in sync with what we're doing. Like PR and social definitely goes hand in hand. I feel like the more conversations you have with everybody involved, the better it is.
I think what's also coming to me is, like, what now, right? Like, what's the big vision after social media ho gaya, digital marketing?
Started as a filter company. Like, you were making filters. And now you're like going to be a full-blown production house, right? What's next in the next few years, next 3 years? What's DTR going to be?
So, next 2 years, ideally have more presence within India, where we have another office in at least another city or two. And in the next 5 years, maybe be more than just India, like maybe a Dubai, maybe a London. The goal is to be a global agency, and that's all that there is. So more projects, more exciting work, and more interesting people to work with, and interesting people in our team, and that's the goal.
And our dream is to be with you in every city.
And I shoot in every city.
Absolutely.
So this was a very interesting and a beautiful heart-centric conversation, and that's what we love to do. And thank you for coming here and making this such an incredible time celebrating our 5 years together.
Congratulations. Yes. Firstly, on completing 5 years. And...
thank you, and we'll celebrate yours soon.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.